Hello, this is Brian McClanahan, and this course is designed to correspond with my newly released book, How Alexander Hamilton Screwed Up America with Regnery History, due out September 2018. The book is actually divided into two parts. The first part covers only Alexander Hamilton. The second part of the book, Hamilton's influence on the federal court system through people like John Marshall, Joseph Story, and Hugo Black. Even though Hamilton had been dead for nearly 200 years when Hugo Black was a Supreme Court justice, his influence was still felt far and wide, and still felt today. So this particular course is designed to explain why Alexander Hamilton is one of the great villains in American history. Now, that's not what you're going to hear in popular press and popular media. Hamilton has become a real darling of the American pop culture. But it shouldn't be so. And so in these next six presentations, I'm going to explain where Hamilton got America off its rails and lied to the American public, both during the time the Constitution was being ratified and then as an influential member of the Washington administration and as a private citizen following that. So I hope you enjoy this particular part of the course, and I hope you enjoy the book. If you do enjoy the book, leave a review on Amazon.com, share it with your friends, write a review somewhere else, and spread the word, because now we have this image of Hamilton that's incorrect, and I'm hoping to right the ship. So let's start presentation one, Hamilton versus Hamilton. And what do I mean by that? Well, absolutely, Hamilton is one of the top three most important members of the founding generation, maybe the most important member of the founding generation. Now, how could I say that? Of course, George Washington is one of my favorites. Washington, without a doubt, is the most important American overall in American history. We wouldn't have the United States without George Washington. And of course, then you have Thomas Jefferson, whose ideas on government generally conflicted with Alexander Hamilton's views on government. And so Hamilton and Jefferson are going to forge this rivalry that will last even into the modern day. However, Alexander Hamilton was the most important member of that generation because his vision of America is the America in which we live today. It's not a stretch to say that we live in Hamilton's United States. When you look at the central government, when you look at our financial institutions, all of that was created by Hamilton. Now, Hamilton didn't get his way oftentimes, at least in the early founding period. He was often defeated. A lot of people don't realize that. But over time, really beginning in the 1860s, you saw this transformation of America from a Jeffersonian America to a Hamiltonian America. Now, I also have a free ebook. If you got this class, you also got my free ebook, The Jeffersonian Solution. And so I explain in that particular ebook how Hamilton's vision can be defeated by a Jeffersonian vision. So that's really the crux of the debate as we look at modern America today. And you can blame Hamilton for almost any problem that we find in American society. If it's an expansive central government, well, blame Hamilton for that. If it is a out-of-control federal court system, well, blame Hamilton for that. If our financial institutions are causing problems, well, blame Hamilton for that. So when you look at Hamilton, as I said at the beginning, he really is a villain, not a hero. Now, I wrote about Hamilton in my Politically Incorrect Guide to the Founding Fathers, and he is an important American, and I think everyone should know about Hamilton and who he was. But this cartoonish image that we've now got of Hamilton is completely wrong. And if we look at Hamilton and how he acted publicly and how he acted privately, you'll find that there are two different Hamiltons, which is why this presentation is called Hamilton versus Hamilton. So let's start with Hamilton's biography. Of course, he did have humble roots, and I think this is one of the areas that the left has keyed in on Hamilton. He's one of them, they think. Hamilton, as a matter of fact, was born out of wedlock in Nevis. He was an extremely brilliant individual. There's no doubt about that. Hamilton is probably one of the smartest men who has ever been part of the American experience. He actually pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He read voraciously. When he was just a teenager, actually before he even became a teenager, he was apprenticed in a merchant business. And while the owner of this business was overseas, Hamilton, as a preteen and an early teenager, was running the business on his own. So when he was in his late teens, he decided to immigrate to the United States. And so here he becomes one of these immigrants that that people often talk about. You know, this is America's a nation of immigrants, which is completely false. But Hamilton was one of these immigrants that had a heavy influence on the direction of the United States. So Hamilton comes over to the U.S. and he becomes immediately engaged in the brewing conflict with the British. And he starts writing pamphlets that are respected across the United States for their depth and skill. As a teenager, there are men twice his age who can't even do what Hamilton's doing. So in that particular way, Hamilton is a great American. He was a great American patriot, a teenage revolutionary. So the war begins, and Hamilton, like all young men at the time, wanted glory on the battlefield. But at 21 years old, he is assigned as Washington's aide-de-camp. Now, this is an important position for Hamilton because he was able to cultivate relationships with some of the most important members of the founding generation, including George Washington. And that relationship with Washington and Hamilton is going to be the most important relationship in American history moving forward. If not for Alexander Hamilton, Washington may have pursued a far different course when it came to governing as first president of the United States under the Constitution. But Washington trusted Hamilton. He was like his son that he never had. Now, of course, Washington is not an old man at this point, but he is old enough to be Hamilton's father. And I think that that's really where Washington forged this very trustworthy situation with Hamilton. He wanted a son. He wanted someone who followed his views on society, who was as an ardent patriot as he was. And we have to remember that Washington was a very conservative individual. George Washington was not a revolutionary like Tom Paine. He wasn't out there calling for beheading people during the French Revolution. Tom Paine had gotten caught up in this French Revolution after the war was over. He was the bohemian patriot, a real radical. George Washington was not that guy. And so Washington thought that what we needed was independence, but not a whole lot else. He liked society the way it was. And Hamilton was perfectly comfortable within that society, and I'll explain why here in a second. But of course, Hamilton wanted glory on the battlefield, and he couldn't get that as aide-de-camp. So eventually, he got a battlefield commission without Washington's permission, by the way, and he would find glory at Yorktown. Hamilton led a great charge on the British at Yorktown and became a real military icon at that point. If you go to the National Infantry Museum at Fort Benning, Georgia, there's a section called The Last 100 Yards. And as you walk through this section, the very first thing you see is Hamilton's assault during the Battle of Yorktown. So there he is, Alexander Hamilton, in wax, essentially, forever in this successful attack at Yorktown. Now, Washington did not like the fact that Hamilton went around him to get this battlefield commission. In fact, there was a very tense situation where Washington was standing on the top of his stairs, red-faced, as Hamilton was telling him he's going off to serve in battle. Washington didn't want it, and he was extremely upset that Hamilton did this. And in fact, Washington, though, never said anything nasty about Hamilton, either to his face or behind his back. Even though Washington was disappointed and he was angry that Hamilton did this, he still treated Hamilton like a son. Hamilton, however, did not always have nice things to say about George Washington. And this shows the duplicitous character of Alexander Hamilton. In fact, during a review that I read on my 9 Presidents Who Screwed Up America, there was a reviewer that said, well, Hamilton said this, and I guess he lied. Now, of course, I didn't talk about Alexander Hamilton in that book the way I'm talking about him in this book. But the reviewer was right on. He couldn't believe that Alexander Hamilton might lie. My particular drive in this book is to show Alexander Hamilton as just that, a liar, because that's what he was throughout most of his life. You can look at it in his personal dealings, and you can definitely look at it in public affairs. Now, Hamilton married into a very prominent New York family, the Schuyler family. This is one of the old Dutch families that had settled along the Hudson River during the colonial period, and they had a lot of money. The Dutch carried on a particular cultural and political situation called patroonships. And as a patroon, you basically were lord of your realm. It was like the old manorial system. And so the Schuyler family had made a lot of money in New York. And Hamilton, being an ambitious person that he was, and his wife being a very beautiful woman, he married into this situation. But Hamilton did not view New York as his country. What you had in the founding generation is a rather interesting position. A lot of Americans thought their state was their country. That's what Thomas Jefferson called Virginia. That was his country. He was a Virginian first and foremost, and a lot of people in the founding generation viewed themselves that way as well. Now, of course, you can find people talking about American nations or the American nation itself. You can find them talking about this one people ideology. But for most Americans, their state was the most important component of their political and social life. In fact, Benjamin Franklin said this in 1754. The reason they couldn't craft a union at that point was because, as he said, the people were too provincial in their outlook, meaning that their states were more important than anything else. The union didn't matter. Franklin was a different type of cosmopolitan than Thomas Jefferson. He was an international cosmopolitan. Jefferson was a Virginian cosmopolitan. And Hamilton was more of this national cosmopolitan. He thought of America as his home. So did John Marshall. James Wilson of Pennsylvania. America was their country, not their state. Now, it's important to note that Wilson was also an immigrant. But a lot of these people who viewed their state as their country, or the state being primary, these people had lived in America for generations. So it's an important part of the American experience here. You're seeing a contrast. When people say we're a nation of immigrants, this is completely false. You did have prominent immigrants, Hamilton and Wilson among them. But you had a lot of people in that founding generation that were third and fourth generation Americans. They thought their state was more important than anything else. But this national perspective is going to have meaning and importance, because if you have a national perspective, you become an American nationalist. And so then everything works within that framework. You have a situation where you have all solutions to all problems coming from top down. You want to have a central government that's going to do a lot of things to ensure that this American nation stays together. And so I think when you start looking at what Hamilton is doing as we move forward in this particular course, and we start talking about Hamilton's constitutional machinations and how they're going to affect America and how he lied about these things, it's important to understand Hamilton's background as an American nationalist, not a New Yorker, but as an American nationalist. Now, it's also important to note about Hamilton's private life, how we could we trust Hamilton? And I'll get to that when we get to the final slide in this particular presentation. So, was Hamilton a conservative? You're going to hear this a lot. In fact, I'm probably going to take a lot of flack from conservatives who don't like what I'm saying about Alexander Hamilton. How could I, as a conservative, say that Alexander Hamilton screwed up America? Well, it's pretty easy as we look at what's happened over time. But when you look at Hamilton's reputation among conservatives, you have to start with someone like Russell Kirk. Russell Kirk, of course, the great thinker, conservative thinker from Michigan, wrote in his conservative mind that Hamilton was far too idealistic to be a real conservative. Now, he did like some of Hamilton's positions on society, on human nature, those things he found common ground with. But what he could not agree with is that Hamilton was an important conservative thinker. However, when you look at Forrest MacDonald, the great historian who taught for years at Brown University and then later at University of Alabama, whose biography on Alexander Hamilton is one of the best that's ever been written. MacDonald focused on Hamilton's financial brilliance. In fact, MacDonald always said that he was a Hamiltonian. He really didn't care for Jefferson a whole lot. And I think that's because he found Hamilton to be the most brilliant of all the founding generation. And when you read this biography, it just gushes with praise for Hamilton. Hamilton could do no wrong. And I think in some ways, I mean, that is the one drawback to the biography, but he does focus on a number of important aspects about Hamilton's life and career. And if you do want to read a generally good biography that's not a massive, you know, treatise, I would go out and pick up Forrest MacDonald's biography on Alexander Hamilton. And of course, MacDonald being a conservative, Hamilton is classified as a conservative as well. Then you have George Will, the columnist who is often seen as one of the leading conservative intellectuals. I tend to disagree with that. But Will famously wrote that we live in Hamilton's America. America is Hamilton's monument. We have a Jefferson monument. We have a Washington monument. George Will said America is Hamilton's monument. And I think he was correct in this particular way. The America in which we live is Hamilton's America. It is his design, not by a written constitution, but in practice. And I think that's the important thing that we're also going to get out of this particular course. You have to understand that what was written in the Constitution and the Constitution as ratified is not the Constitution Hamilton wanted, and we'll get to that as we get to some of the subsequent presentations. Then in the late 1990s, you had a resurrection of Alexander Hamilton as a conservative. People like David Brooks and William Crystal, well known as neoconservatives, both of them said that what we need is a national greatness conservatism. That's what they called it in a very famous editorial. We need a national greatness conservative. What conservatism? What we need is to revive the people like Teddy Roosevelt and Alexander Hamilton and Abraham Lincoln, because that was, in their mind, the fullest expression of what America could be and what America was and what America is in that particular way. So it's this national greatness that they wanted. They wanted something that was better than just a simple federation. They wanted an American empire. And Hamilton was definitely behind the expansion of central power as Secretary of Treasury and the interpretation of the Constitution that's often called the loose interpretation. And so without that interpretation, without this nationalist perspective, we don't get national greatness conservatism. We don't get Abraham Lincoln, and we don't get Teddy Roosevelt. We also don't get the federal court system the way it is today. So if you don't like those things, if you don't like the federal government ruling on every single situation under the sun, what kind of bathrooms you can have, for example, who can hold private property, who can't, all these different kind of things within a state, then you have to blame Hamilton for all that. In fact, you're getting this course through the website Blame Hamilton, because I think that is the best way to look at American history. You have to blame Alexander Hamilton for all that ails us today. And then you had Richard Brookhiser, who is also a well-known neoconservative today. He wrote a biography of Hamilton in 1999 that pretty much echoed what Forrest MacDonald had said in the 1970s. American capitalism, the American financial system, was Hamilton's blueprint. And of course, when this biography was produced in 1999, the state of New York created a traveling exhibition on the New York Historical Society, I should say, created a traveling exhibition on Alexander Hamilton. And Brookhiser's biography was the central piece of that particular exhibit. And so I think that it's important to note that Hamilton's reputation was quite revitalized in the late 1990s and early 2000s. But these weren't the only people who were trying to make Hamilton their own. What about Hamilton as a liberal? Well, you have leftists who think that Hamilton is actually one of theirs. People like Michael Lind, who wrote a very influential biography, saying that Hamilton can be traced from Lincoln to Lyndon Baines Johnson. He's not incorrect in that particular way. Now, conservatives would bristle at this. Well, how can you say Hamilton was a liberal? His views on human nature and society are in stark contrast to what Johnson wanted, for example. But when you look at his influence on government, and this is what Lind is doing, he's saying, well, look, I mean, Hamilton believed in a very active central government. He's not saying anything that hadn't been said before. Herbert Croly, in the early 20th century, who wrote a very important book that Teddy Roosevelt, in fact, read, The Promise of American Life, this particular book said what we need to do is create a political party that's both Hamiltonian and Jeffersonian. The Hamiltonian part being the belief in an active central authority that has to do all the things that we want it to do. But of course, Hamilton was too elitist, so we got to have this Jefferson tempering with Jefferson democracy. So when you look at what Lind is saying, he's simply echoing Herbert Croly that, yeah, Hamilton was the architect of American big government. Now, of course, Hamilton's big government and modern big government are two different things. There's no doubt about it. But without Hamilton, we don't have the blueprint. We don't have the framework for this big government ideology to take hold in America. Then you have Stephen Knott, who said that Hamilton's America was every progressive solution in the 20th century. So when you look at all the things that we've gotten out of progressivism, well, that's actually Hamiltonianism. And again, I don't think Knott is too far off here. I think you can say that Hamilton's vision, this is why I say we need to blame Hamilton, that Hamilton's vision, his vision of an expansive central government, has allowed for all of these progressive things to happen. If we don't have this loose construction, if we don't have a Hamilton lying in 1788 for ratification, then doing the exact opposite when the Constitution's ratified, if we actually stuck to that Constitution as ratified, which is the originalist position. Now, Originalism is not, we're going to read the document and look at the words and see what they say. No, originalism is how the founding generation swore it would be interpreted when it was put into effect. You have to go to the ratifying conventions for that and the ratifying debates that were held in the public press. Hamilton among them, who said very different things in 1788 than he said as Secretary of Treasury. So we have to hold their feet to the fire. That original Constitution, this is what the American public bought. It's not what Hamilton wanted, and he was lying the whole time. Then, of course, you have the left-wing Brookings Institute that has the Hamilton Project, which is a series of progressive solutions to current problems. And, of course, Hamilton's their guy. And finally, we have Manuel Lin Miranda, whose Hamilton the Musical has created this idea that Hamilton is simply just a modern-day hipster. All he needs is the man bun and the shaggy beard, and Hamilton would be every modern-day leftist. He's an immigrant. He's diverse. He's one of them. He believes in big government. He's a social justice warrior. This is Alexander Hamilton. Now, of course, that's not true. Hamilton was really none of those things in terms of what they're looking at on the social aspect of it. But regardless, and of course they mischaracterize Hamilton as a staunch abolitionist. Hamilton was a mild abolitionist. He wasn't really a person interested in the eradication of slavery anywhere else, but maybe in New York. You have to remember that New York was only gradually abolishing slavery when Hamilton was alive. So it was not even out the door yet in New York. There were still many slaveholding families along that Hudson River Valley and elsewhere in New York. So Miranda is way off in characterizing Hamilton this way, but this is what everybody thinks. You walk into your Barnes & Noble nowadays, your book's a million, if you got one, and you have Hamilton packs. You've got the book, you've got the DVD, you've got the CD, you've got a cup, you've got all these things about Hamilton. And that's Miranda. Now, of course, Miranda is making a tremendous number of Federal Treasury notes on these things, and that's great for him. And, of course, Ron Chernow, who wrote the biography that Miranda read and then, of course, made into the musical, he's become filthy, stinking rich because of this. But the fact is, both of these guys are wrong. Now, Chernow's biography is not bad, but he glosses over some important parts of Hamilton's life that really make him out to be an American villain. Okay, well, all that said, which vision of Hamilton is correct? We've talked about Hamilton as the conservative, Hamilton as the liberal. Well, in reality, both visions of Hamilton are correct. And I think that's the major problem with Hamilton and why he is so problematic for American history. Hamilton can be something to both sides. He can be this conservative whose views on society and human nature mesh with conservatives, and also the neoconservative idea, which they're really just progressives, but the neoconservatives and this national greatness conservatism. And, of course, all the things that Hamilton advocated for big government have, of course, come back to foster this progressive vision of America and all the things they want the central government to do. So I think it's important to understand that Hamilton is something to everyone. And this is why Hamilton screwed up America. Now, why is this the case? Because the main thing about Hamilton we have to remember is that Hamilton lied so easily to everyone he knew. Hamilton lied to the public in 1788 when he was writing, in 1787, when he was writing the Federalist Essays and explaining the Constitution to the public, because the Constitution that Hamilton advocated in 1787 and 1788 was not the Constitution that we got once Hamilton was part of the Washington administration and the first cabinet. So Hamilton's lies created all kinds of problems for the future of America. We still live in a situation, as I've said, where we have a Hamiltonian vision and a Jeffersonian vision of what America should be. He also lied to in personal issues. So, for example, Hamilton had a well-documented affair while his wife was deathly ill at their estate. He's carrying on an affair, and then he's blackmailed about it, and he continues to pay the husband of this woman so that he can still see her. So Hamilton was duplicitous, not just in his public life, but also in his private life. He said terrible things about George Washington behind his back. As we'll see when we get to the information when Hamilton and foreign policy, he essentially committed treason because of his duplicity. So it's two things that Hamilton wanted out of government were force and corruption. And this is a very important part in understanding who Hamilton was as a person. So we have two different constitutions to talk about here. On the one case, we have the U.S. Constitution, and then we have the British Constitution. There's a little story, well-known story, that Jefferson once told. He had a dinner party where John Adams and Hamilton and, of course, Jefferson were in attendance. And the conversation turned to constitutions. And John Adams supposedly said, look, the British Constitution, if you get rid of the corruption, it's ideal. Hamilton said, no, it's the corruption that makes it perfect. And this, if you understand that about Hamilton, you understand who Hamilton was. Now, Jefferson mistakenly said, Hamilton's honest as a man, but as a politician, he believes in force or corruption to govern individuals. Hamilton was not honest as a man. He lied all the time. And of course, that corruption, as he saw in the British model, that's what allowed all the things to work. And so essentially what happened in this Jeffersonian vision and Hamiltonian vision, we have two different constitutions. We have a written constitution, which, of course, there's two different ways to do that. You can be a textualist where you say the Constitution says this and this is what it means. But, of course, that opens it up to interpretation. Or you can be an originalist and you go back to the ratification debates and the friends of the Constitution, what they were saying about the document. And that's the Constitution we should follow. That's the preferable course. And then, of course, you have the loose interpretation. The nationalists like Hamilton and James Wilson and others who said, you know what? What we're going to do is we're going to have a constitution that will just be interpreted by the courts. And so it doesn't really matter what the document says. We're just going to pass legislation. We'll let the courts sort it out. John Marshall was this way, Joseph Story. So I think it's very important to understand that we're actually playing two different games on two different fields. We have a written U.S. Constitution and an unwritten U.S. Constitution. And this particular book explores that unwritten constitution, the one that Hamilton started creating as Secretary of Treasury, and then the one that Marshall and Story and Black created later on, in into the 20th century. So that's why Hamilton created this monster of a central authority, because we have a system that relies on force and corruption to govern individuals. We had duplicity in government, duplicity in Hamilton's private life, and then duplicity in government. And so when you put those two things together, what you get is a disastrous situation for the United States moving forward. We get Hamiltonian America, and Hamiltonian America is not a great America in terms of what could have been with America, which is a Jeffersonian America. So think about that as we go through the course. Think about that as I talk about the next five presentations and give you examples of how Hamilton was doing these things behind the scenes, how he was lying constantly about what he truly intended to do. And I think you're going to get a very different picture of Hamilton. Hamilton should not be considered one of the great Americans. He should be considered a villain in American history. All right, so I'll see you on presentation two next time.